Good evening, gentlemen. We're continuing the Rambam Hilchas Kriyishma Perk Dalet Halacha Aleph, Chapter 4, the First Law, page 76-77 in your Maznaim text. Now, we're moving along,
You missed the class.
It's a short perk, and maybe we could finish it in one sitting, and we'll finish with Hilchas Kriyishma already, or maybe one or two halachas will be left to go. We're going to discuss different people who are required and not required to say the Kriya Shema. Halacha Aleph. Noshim v'avodim uktanim peturim mikriya Shema. Women, Canaanite slaves, children under bar or bat mitzvah are exempt from reading the Kriya Shema. Okay? The reason for all this is, number one, women, we know, are exempt from mitzvahs that are time-bound mitzvahs. Mitzvahs aseisha asman grama. The Kriya Shema is clearly a time-bound mitzvah, because you must say it b'shachbucha as you go to sleep, which is from sunset until dawn. And then v'kumecha, when you get up, from neitzachama, from a little bit before neitzachama, until the third hour of the day. Definitely time-bound mitzvahs. Certainly mothers with little children would find it very challenging to be able to say the Shema. That's not the only reason, but certainly that is one of the reasons that fits into play over here. And definitely they would be exempt from the mitzvah. Children as servants, Canaanite slaves, are compared to women in this area in Halacha. And children obviously do not have the intellectual capacity to be required to do this as well. So that these all are putter from it. Now, let's see if there's anything to add.
Is and not even Jewish, though?
Well, no, he has certain status of, he has bris milah, and he's obliged in all the mitzvahs that a woman is obliged in. So he has a certain status, so he has to do certain mitzvahs. It's interesting, there's another reason they exempt servants. It says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Listen, Jewish people, Hashem is your God, Hashem is one, and not, you can only have one master. A servant already has another master, and therefore it's challenging for him to say, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So he's out of that category. So although someone had asked, but Rabbi, way in the beginning of the class, so he asked, are women obliged to say it? And I said, yes. And another Rambam says, no. So in terms of actual halacha, the Shulchan Aruch says, though women have no obligation, even rabbinically, to recite the Shema, the Shulchan Aruch though says it's proper that they do so. Why? In order to accept upon themselves the yoke of heaven. And therefore, we see clearly, although they're not obliged, but again, it is proper for them. It's proper for them to say it. So therefore, any woman who has a few minutes in the day, the whole Shema, the longest version, is let's say 4 or 5 minutes. So certainly if a woman has 4 or 5 minutes, she should say it by saying that she has fulfilled a biblical mitzvah, and she gets credit for a mitzvah. Certainly, if she can, she should. Similarly, they're exempt from the blessings before the Kriya Shema. But according to many opinions, they're obliged to say blessings afterwards, because it talks about the exodus from Egypt. The Aruch HaShulchan brings down that women can say the brachas of the Kriya Shema, and adds that the women of his area, which is the area around Russia in the 19th and 20th century, they were accustomed to saying the brachas of Kriya Shema, and that they should be blessed for their meritorious actions. So there's different posts about, you know, whether women should or not. But from a pure halachic perspective, there's enough leniency not to, but certainly it's something that they should do. It's good for the neshama to certainly talk about the oneness of God and that accept his yoke of heaven. Yes, sir?
Without digressing, how does that compare to the Shemona Esther requirement?
Well, that is a digression, and let's wait until we get to the Shema. When we get to the next halachas of tefillah, which will give us the discussion of women. Essentially, women are chayiv in some form of davening, because everybody requires mercy. Everybody requires mercy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What the extent of that obligation is, that we'll have to leave for Hilchos Tefillah. But, so therefore, there's more of an obligation for a woman to daven Shmona Esrei, or some kind of a prayer, than for them to say the Shema. So in terms of a priority, you know, it's better that they say a tefillah than to say the Shema. That would be in terms of a priority. But then again, Shema is very important too. You should try to say both. Anyway, that's the basic halach. Umelamdim esakatanim likrosa bonasa, and we try to teach the children to read the Shema bonasa at its proper time. Umavarach lefanel chareh, to make the bracha before and afterwards. Why? Kidei lechancham, to train them in mitzvahs. Even though biblically children are not included in mitzvahs, but rabbinically there's an obligation to train them in mitzvahs, and therefore a father is obligated to teach his little son to read the Shema at the right time. As King Shlomo says, Chanoch lenar al pi darko, educate a child according to his ways, so even when he gets old, he will not desist from those paths. Train a child to say Shema when he's young at the right time, they'll say it the rest of their life, Shema at the right time.
Does that mean the obligation's greater to train a son than a daughter?
Well, because the son is chayiv to saying the Shema, a girl's not. Right. Again, it would be meritorious to teach a girl as well, obviously. But there's clearly a rabbinic obligation of education to teach it to a son. Okay, we could say nowadays certainly girls need an education too, the kind of society we live in. They need to say Shema. It's without question. It's a proper thing to do. We can't oblige it, but it's a very proper thing to do. And at the right time, the Rambam adds, even if it's a little kid, you know, sometimes you have to say Shema by 9 o'clock in the morning. You should make sure they say it by 9 o'clock in the morning. That's an important thing as well. Okay? Mi shayalibo tarud, if a person's heart was all confounded, is all involved in so many things, v'nech paz lidvar mitzvah, and he's all into doing a certain mitzvah, he's engaged in a mitzvah, pater mikol ha-mitzvahs. You're free from doing any other mitzvah if you're in the middle of a particular mitzvah, and that includes umi kriyashma and from kriyashma as well. Because that's the principle. Anyone who's engaged in a mitzvah is exempt from a mitzvah. That's obvious logic. Because the whole point of a mitzvah is to be connected to Hashem. So if you're already doing something that's connecting you to Hashem, why would you stop one to do something else to connect to Hashem if this is already connecting you to Hashem? Now, even the Shema, you know, it's very choshev, it's very important, because it has the acceptance of the yoke of heaven, but I'm already connecting to Hashem in another plane. So therefore, you don't say the Shema. And we learn this from the words, from the different wording of b'shivtecha b'veisecha, when you sit in your house, uvelechtecha b'veisecha, when you're going on your way. The Gemara says, when you're going on your way, that's when you have to say it. When you're going on God's way, then you don't have to say it. If you're going yourself to go to a football game, you got to say Shema. Even though you're very excited and anxious about going to a football game in Buffalo, still got to stop and say the Shema, because that's your way that you're going. You have to say Shema in the way that you're going. When you're going to do a mitzvah for Hashem, you're going on His way. When you're going on His way, then you don't have to say the Shema, because it's His way and not your way. And you're already doing one mitzvah, so how can you do it? Stop it to do another mitzvah?
What would be an example?
Will be an example of that. He's going to give you examples.
Well, besides that,
no, he's going to what?
Besides the wedding.
That's a good one. What if you have to? What if you are involved in pidyon shvuim? You're redeeming a prisoner. You're being a prisoner, and every minute is important. And if every minute is needed to redeem the prisoner, it's not time to say the Shema.
Rabbi, studying
Torah. An onen is not a mitzvah. That's different. It's not so much a mitzvah. There's other reasons why you can't do it. But, you know, there a mace mitzvah, if you have to bury somebody. If it's something that has to be done now that cannot be delayed,
something for the tzibur,
you have to do now. You have to know. Again, it's not likely you're going to be engaged every minute you can't do it, but there are examples of that. We already talked about that. But that's from Torah to Torah. Remember, that's from Torah to Torah. And to say Shema is not exactly a big interruption of Torah. You're going from one type of Torah to another type of Torah, so you could do that. So there aren't too many exceptions. I will grant you that. But the Rambam gives the classic example. Lefikach, therefore, chasan shenasa besula. If a groom marries a virgin, pater mikriya Shema atshiyovala. He is exempt from saying a Kriya Shema until he's consummated the marriage. Why? Lefi she'ein daita pnuya. His mind is not clear. Shema le'yimsel v'sulim. He's very concerned that perhaps she will not be a virgin. Right? And therefore, he's very involved in doing the mitzvah. That's a very important thing in Yiddishkeit, to marry a woman who's a virgin. It's very important for the whole spiritual development of the marriage. And that's what you pay extra money for in Diksuva. For that exactly. And for a chassan, this is an important thing to know, that his wife is a virgin. So because of that, his mind is so wrapped up into the mitzvah that he's doing, that he's not going to be able to concentrate. You know, in a permissive society where people before their marriage are veterans at the activity, then, you know, it's not to say that their minds might not be so busy.
This doesn't apply to those.
But clearly, this is the first time you're engaged in doing this mitzvah, and you're concerned that the woman is a basula, that is taking up your mind, and you can't say the Shema. Now,
it still seems a little strange to me, though, the Lashon Hazir, because you would think that he'd be more concerned of pleasing his new color or something like that. It's just almost like a selfish thing to do it for himself.
No, it's not selfish. That's part of the whole marriage. It's for the benefit of the entire marriage that she should be a virgin. It's not just, if anything, it's less physically pleasing if she is not a virgin. If she is a virgin, rather. It makes it much more difficult to consummate the marriage. It's not exactly easy. And if she wasn't a virgin, it would be easier for him. So obviously it's not his own selfish needs. It's deep spiritual concepts that are involved over here.
That you're not even talking about self-spirituality. You're talking about marital.
That's right. And of course, there's other reasons the Gemara gives. Perhaps he will be hurt, engaged in doing the mitzvah. It's a physically taxing experience as well. So that for all those reasons wrapped together, he can't focus on the Shemoneh Esrei. However, if he was not on the Shema, however, if he did not for whatever reasons consummate the marriage in the first few days, v'imshad Matzei Shabbos, and they waited until Matzei Shabbos below Baal, and he hasn't consummated the marriage, chayv likros mimatzei Shabbos, from Matzei Shabbos and on, he should say the Shema. Now, of course, you're saying, what does Matzei Shabbos have to do with anything? So the answer is, the Gemara says the custom was in the olden days to get married on Wednesday nights.
Wednesday.
That was the custom. The reason being, because if you found out she wasn't a virgin that night, you could take her to the court the next day, because the courts were on Mondays and Thursdays, and therefore you could take her to the court and demand whatever you want to demand. There's other reasons. I don't remember offhand why they didn't do Sundays. I forgot.
I think it was the catered
because for Shabbos. You weren't ready for Shabbos. You couldn't get the meals ready.
To have a wedding
ready for Sunday night, you just had a whole Shabbos. Can't do that. But by Wednesday ready, you got time to do that. So anyway, so it's not just, stam any much of Shabbos. You're talking about Wednesday night, so it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You have three nights. And what the Rambam continues is saying, His mind has settled down already. He's more accustomed to being with her, and he's not that excited as excited as he is right in the beginning. Even though he has not consummated the marriage, but still his ability to concentrate is heightened. We will see that the halacha does not follow the Rambam's position, as will be explained later on as well. The Shulchan Aruch tells us there was a time when bridegrooms were exempt, but nowadays they're not exempt at all, because the truth of the matter is, who has any kavana for Kriya Shema at all, let alone saying I have less kavana now that I'm getting married. So therefore, if somebody would say, I'm not saying the Shema, it's my wedding night. Oh, who are you, Mr. Tzaddik, that every day until now you had kavana with your Shema, that it's being so, So that would be a bit of arrogance. So nowadays, our kavana b'chlal, in general, is not on a very high level. And your Shema won't probably be much worse on your wedding night than any other night of the week. And therefore, now we say that they are obliged to do this in the contemporary settings that we live in now. And even in the times of the Gemara, it was such. Okay, base. Now, just following along those lines, but going according to the earlier times where we were freed. So what if you marry a woman who is not a virgin, a divorcee, a widow, or whatever? So then there's nothing to be stressed out about. You're engaged in a mitzvah, but you have to read why. There's nothing that's confounding his mind. Anything similar to that. So therefore, any mitzvah you're doing where you could say the Shema and the mitzvah is not confounding you so much, then you should say it. So only certain mitzvahs would have that kind of caliber that would keep you so confounded. Okay, moving on to a different area from simchas to, unfortunately, sad occasions. Gimel. Misha meslo meshu chayev lisabel. Person who has, someone dies upon him, who he is obliged to mourn. And we're talking about the six closest relatives. as we talk about, a father, mother, son, daughter, sister, brother, unmarried, sister, brother, and wife. Right? That would be the closest relative. So you're obliged to mourn for them. So someone like that, Potter and Kriyashma Achik Farenu. You're free from saying Kriyashma until they are buried. Why? Again, your mind is not free to think and read properly. And this goes so far, this is a person who's an onain, that's what we call halachic onain, and there's a number of reasons for this. Number one, on a very simple level, you'd be very busy taking care of the funeral arrangements. And that takes a lot of your time. But then the commentaries say, even if, let's say, you had nothing to do with the funeral arrangements, you just gave it to the Chevra Kedisha, and everything's taken care of for you. But certainly, still he would still be free from saying the Kriyashma, because clearly his mind would not be settled with him. And that's what the Torah says, and the rabbis base it on the words of the Shema. L'man tizkar siyom tzeitzcha meretz Yisrael, you should remember the day you went out of Egypt, kol yimei chayecha, all the days of your life. What do you mean, all the days of your life? So Gemara says, days in which you're engaged in living, and not days in which you're engaged with the dead, which means taking care of the dead that are buried and need to be buried. And therefore, that is the halacha. The halacha status and onan is you're free from all positive mitzvahs. You don't make any brachos, you don't do anything. The only thing you are obliged is to refrain from transgressing negative mitzvahs. You have to wash negelvasser, but...
all positive mitzvahs is bound by time.
No, you washing negelvasser, I'm not saying like a bracha, you have to take the tum off, You don't make any brachas, you make no brachas, you don't do any mitzvahs, you don't blow shofar, you don't put the phone on, you don't do anything until after the funeral and sometimes even the next day. You can't do averos, can't hear lashon hara, you can't eat treif, all those things you can't do because that's just don't do it. But to be doing something, the rabbi said, it's not possible for a person to, again, you see a very important lesson. So why can't I just go through the motions? Why can't I just go? But the answer is they want you to stop for a whole day, and then when you come back afterwards, you'll be able to do it properly. But we can't, this is such a heavy thing on a person that we just can't make such an expectation of a person. Now, that's the person who has to mourn directly. Now, there's another concept of having a shomer who is watching the body before the burial. So, and a shomer who has to watch the body can't leave the body. Can't leave the body. Can't say the kriyashma in the presence of the body, because we know that's an insult to the dead. Doing a mitzvah in their presence that they can't do is insulting the dead. So if you're alone and you're a shomer, you're out of the game as well. However, v'imhoya shomim shnayim, what if there were two shomerim? Two guardians. So echad mishamer, one will watch. Vashed and Ishmael, the second guy slips out to another place, and that other place has to be at least more than four amos away. And he reads v'kare, and then v'chozer mishamer. Then he comes back and does his watch. V'nishmerach, and the other guy now slips away v'kare and reads v'chein. And similarly, hachofer kever lebeis. If you're digging the grave for a dead person, potter mikriyashma as well. You don't have to say the shema when you're digging the grave because you're being oisek in a mitzvah as well.
That's only during the course of
digging. Yes, you should certainly try to arrange your grave digging operations so to give you the time to say the Shema before or afterwards. But sometimes, you know, if you're the only guy digging the grave and it's a frozen tundra in Thornhill, you know, now it's a machine, 3 minutes, boom, the hole's out. But go start digging a 6-foot hole now in freezing weather with a shovel. You're going to be going for hours and hours, and you may not be able to say the Shema. Because you don't want the body to sit around. That's an insult to the body. Okay, Dalit. Therefore, we have the following halacha. Preferably, ein motzina sameis lekavro samach lesman kriyas shma. You should not take the dead out to be buried close to the time of saying the Shema. Because if you're going to do that, you're going to force people to miss saying the Shema. Don't plan funerals, you know, within the first 3 hours. And that's generally so. I don't think you have any funerals that are before 10 o'clock in the morning. And I don't think that's the reason why they have this, because I also want to make sure it's not during rush hour traffic, and that's the most important reason why the funeral chapels are doing that. But it could be an Eretz Yisrael. Maybe that was the reason. But you delay it to at least let everybody say the Shema. Elim Ken, unless Hoya Adam Gadol was a big man, a really choshuva person. Why? like a mamish, the god Lador, the great sage of the generation, dies. Why? Because when such a person dies, it wouldn't be the honor for him that people let business as usual, you know. Well, he died, so let's daven, let's say Kriya Shema, it's like a normal day, right? No, you first have to bury him with kavod, with honor. It's not business as usual. And that's what the Rambam is saying. However, the Shulchan Aruch does not paskin that way, and says nowadays, even if a great person dies, you still say the Shema first. The reason is, there's no kind of great people nowadays like there were in the old days. You know, you're talking about Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Now those were big men. Not taking away Chas v'Shom from any of the Gedolim of this generation. But they still don't come close to these angels who were in human form. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says this halacha does not apply nowadays. Yeah, there is that aspect, but you still should say the Shema. There still are certain mitzvahs you should be doing. Once you start a funeral, you don't know how long it's going to take, and you can have all kinds of problems. We're very used to these. Everything's been done for you and dug for you, and it's 1, 2, 3 from the funeral chapel till the shiva house. It's all done in under 2 hours. This is extremely part of the fast food industry. You know, it's all part of the quick service. But, you know, you did it normally. You carried the thing. And
it was a long thing.
Can you imagine from Yerushalayim to Har Zeisim? You got to go. And it's not just a thing. You're walking the casket. You're digging the hole. And that's a big job. It could take a whole day, a funeral. So get the Shema in, especially in a wintry day. You know, you certainly want to do that. Right, so that's why it's preferable to do that. But what if you didn't? Right? Let's say they start the funeral early anyway. And now it's time to say the Shema. They're all escorting the dead. So the rule is like this. Whoever that the coffin needs these people, they're part of the ones engaged in carrying it. Kigong, for example. No, say I meet the ones who are carrying the casket directly. Really, it's the bed. They didn't use a casket. They used a regular stretcher. It's a stretcher with a blanket over it, with a sheet over it. They didn't use coffins in the days of where they don't use it now in Eretz Yisrael either. In many places, it's just a sheet on a stretcher and just slip them into the ground, and that's it. No boxes, none of that. It's all North American conventions to take more money out of your pocket, right?
What did your uncle used to say?
Yes, America Ghana. America Ghana. Right?
Yeah, but there's laws where you can't carry their body straight into
because the ground. It's America Ghana. The whole thing's ridiculous. Health issue. Who goes to cemetery already? You know, health issues. Now it's 6 feet in the ground, health issues. You know, I saw this. It was terrible in Cleveland. That was at a funeral. It's a brick vault. That they'll have to be buried in the Jewish cemeteries. It's a law. In the ground, but it's like brick. You know? Like incredible. The coffin goes in that thing. Okay, so listen. There's somebody in the brick business that needed to make some more money. That's all. An Irish kite that has health issues. 6 feet in the ground, what's going to happen already? You know, somebody has to make money. That's all. What do they care? Anyway, so whoever the body needs, so that's why mita means a bed. Literally, it's a bed. It's a stretcher. Those who are carrying the stretcher, v'chilufeim, those who exchange with them, v'chilufeichov, and those who are going to exchange them afterwards. Because you got them carrying the next guy. You know, you could be needed at a moment's notice, right? So you go to any minute, you may be needed. Let's say you have a very heavy person you're carrying. I can't hold it anymore. This goes to the next one. So, you know, you're on call, as it were, so you're free from saying the Shema. It doesn't matter if you're in front of the casket, after the casket, but you don't have anyone totally involved. But the other people who are escorting, who aren't carrying the casket at all, that's not needed for them, they are obliged to say, because they're just escorting. Okay, so for a couple of minutes you won't escort it. It's not going to slow down the funeral, and therefore they would have to read.
What distance from the body do they have to be?
Again, more than four amas. 6 feet, 6 to 8 feet. So it doesn't insult. Can't be any graves. Yeah. So you have to step outside the cemetery. That could be a possibility as well. Okay, moving on to Lacha Hey, continuing with the funerals. let's say they're engaged with the eulogies, right? Everybody's listening to the hesped from the eulogizers or the chazonim or whatever. V'yigiyazman kriyashma. And now it's time for kriyashma. Ticking away. This man's going to be over another 50 minutes, and this guy's been going for a half an hour, right? So now what do we say? Yizman shameis munach lifneim. What if the body is right there in the chapel while they're giving the eulogies? Then mishmatim echad echad. People go out one at a time. It wouldn't look nice if everybody leaves to say the Shema while the guy is speaking. It's kind of insulting to everybody involved. So you go out one at a time, a couple of times, it doesn't look, you know, it's discreet, and they read, but then they come back to the eulogy. But what if Ein HaMeis Mutal Lifneim? Let's say you have a eulogy and the dead body is not in front. A lot of times you have, sometimes the mace is somewhere else, and they give that, for example, in the Bayit, if they have a funeral in the Bayit.
They did when the Rav's, the rabbits had passed away. It was in the Bayit. Kohanim were not permitted.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So therefore, the body is left outside, and the people come into the shul. Yeah. Because it's Kohanim. They do have funerals in the Bayit, but they never let the casket go in. Generally, they don't allow that in. If you have a case like that, so the mace is not in front of you, and you're giving the hespedim in this room over here, or let's say the mace is in a side room, whatever, then it's time to say the Shema, so we give a clap, Kriya Shema, Kolom Karin Kriya Shema, everybody reads a Kriya Shema in the middle of the eulogy. Va'avel, but the mourner who's there, he can't say the Shema, Yoyshev Edoimim, he sits silently and does nothing. Why? He's not obliged to read the Shema until the dead is buried. He's still in that state of aninus, so he can't do it. But that would be a case where you would stop the eulogies right in the middle. Okay.
The person giving the eulogy, would he be considered involved?
No, he's stopping. Everybody's stopping.
He stops also.
So you see, even you're involved in the mitzvah, but it's possible to do both. It's not going to just wreck the funeral if we take a 3-minute pause to say the Shema. And you say the Shema. So now they've buried the dead. Now the mourners are turning around to receive comfort from everybody else who's there. Everybody's moving from the place of the grave to the place where everybody stands, where the Avelim are standing, to make the two rows, as we commonly do, to receive the condolences. And now the Shema clock is ticking away. So now you're getting to those positions, getting to that position a little further from the grave to give the words of condolence. So what do we say? If you can begin the Shema to finish the Shema, I feel a pasuk, even just through the one pasuk of Shema, so at least get that in. Sure, before the mourners come to the rows and need to get the words of comfort, then yeskil, you begin it. But if you can't even get the one line in before the mourner comes, yeskil, you cannot begin. But rather you give comfort to the mourners. Why? Because giving comfort to a mourner is a biblical mitzvah, is part of the aspect of gemilas chesed, doing acts of kindness. It's an act of kindness to the living, giving comfort, and it's an act of kindness to the dead, because it's giving honor to them. And how do we know that an act of loving kindness is biblically? So the rabbis tell us where the Torah says, and say for Shmos, and you should show them the way to go in. What's the way, says the Gemara? That's Gemilas Chesed. And we also find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he himself comforts the mourners, as we see after Avraham died, Hashem comforted Yitzchak. And therefore, since this is mamish, a biblical mitzvah, we're engaged in the mitzvah of comforting the mourners, and someone engaged in a mitzvah is free from doing another mitzvah, especially when it's a biblical mitzvah, certainly. So therefore, you're free from the mitzvah. And when you finish with them, you're finished with the mourners, and there's still time. Yes, chilikros, begin to read. So it seems from the Rambam, it appears they're only saying if you have time. But if you don't have any time, then you should try to start it before you get involved in doing the mitzvah of Tanchum. In other words, let's say there'd be no time. So then, you know what? You should just say the Shema and don't do the mitzvah. You haven't yet started the new mitzvah. So do the Shema mitzvah, get in the way. If you have to take care of the mourners and you still have time afterwards, then you say it afterwards. But you shouldn't negate the mitzvah of saying the Shema. Now, further than that, B'nei Ha'adam, Ha'omdim Bashura, What about the people that are in the row now? So let's determine the halal, what your requirements are. Hapnim, the inner line where the people are going to face these people and they have the real obligation of comforting them. Shem roim, pnei avim, they see the faces of the mourners. Peturim kriya shema. They do not say the shema at the moment where they're comforting the mourners. Vachitzom, the people in the outer row that do not see hoel ve'enim roim esavim, they do not see the mourners. Chayovim be kriya shema komam, they certainly have to say shema in its time. But the ones engaged in doing it, they would have to not say the shema until later. Okay, we did 6 halachas, not bad. So tomorrow, Mirz Hashem, we'll finish Hilchos Kriyishma and move on to Hilchos Tvila.